Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, 89.1 FM, Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. It has been a wet and wild week, and now the governor has declared a state of emergency for San Diego County. But the rains have also brought good news, an official end to the drought in San Diego County, and we'll have details on both of those very important stories on today's show. On the first part of our show, we'll lead with some major national news during the first week of Donald Trump's presidency, including a lawsuit filed against Trump claiming that his conflicts of interest violate the Constitution, a controversy over alternative facts coming out of the Trump administration, and the scrubbing of the White House website of many important human rights and social justice issues. Trump also killed the Trans-Pacific Trade Pact Agreement, eliminated funding for women's health care overseas, and issued an executive order weakening the Affordable Care Act. He ordered an end to an Obama administration decision that would have reduced mortgage insurance for first-time homebuyers under the FHA. On Tribal Beat, hear about a Trump decision to greenlight the Dakota Access Pipeline as well as the Keystone XL. Then on the second half of our show today, we'll first have some news about Governor Brown's State of the State address, in which he struck a defiant tone against the Trump administration policies. And then we'll have some local responses to that State of the State speech from two San Diego legislators, Democrat Tony Atkins and Republican Assemblyman Randy Vopel from East County. Learn where you can get some free tax help through the county. In El Cajon, hear about a burning issue involving a proposed crematorium in an urban area. We'll tell you who the city of Santee has appointed to fill a vacancy on the city council. And then on Destination East County, hear about all the most exciting festivals and events coming up across our region, including some Valentine's Day happenings that your sweetheart may love. We'll have all these stories and more on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
This is Jonathan Getz with an important message for anyone who suffered damages in the storms that have ravaged our region. Governor Jerry Brown has issued an emergency declaration for San Diego County and 56 other California counties hard hit by the recent winter storms. Brown asked the state's Office of Emergency Assistance to provide help to local governments and communities damaged by flooding, mudslides, erosion, or damage to roads and highways. The governor also instructed Caltrans to ask for immediate assistance from the Federal Highway Administration's Emergency Relief Program, though it's unclear whether the Trump administration will grant the request for federal aid to California. If you have storm damage to your property, you may be eligible for assistance. The County of San Diego asks that you please report all storm damage to sdcountyrecovery.com.
The recent storms brought heavy rain and flash flooding across our region, but now there's some good news as a result of all that rain. The County Water Authority Board has declared an end to the drought in San Diego County. The Water Authority is also asking Governor Jerry Brown to rescind drought emergency regulations for areas of California no longer in drought conditions. As of January 23rd, San Diego's official rainfall measurement station at Lindbergh Field had recorded 172% of average rainfall since the start of the water year on October 1st. More importantly, the water content of snow in the Sierra Nevada, a prime water source for much of the state, was 193% above average. Meanwhile, snowpack levels were at 161% of average in the upper basin of the Colorado River that supplies much of our water. The state's current emergency drought regulation is set to expire on February 28th, and the state board is expected to decide on February 8th whether or not to extend the regulation. Water Authority General Manager Maureen Stapleton in San Diego said continuing unnecessary statewide drought emergency regulations hampers the region's ability to sustain a healthy and vibrant economy by undermining efforts to retain and attract businesses and investment. The San Diego region has invested approximately $3.5 billion over the past three decades to increase regional water supply reliability, including seawater desalinization, additional water storage capacity, and upgraded conveyance systems. And many local water agencies have also encouraged conservation among their ratepayers. Now, even before the state emergency water use mandates, Per capita water use in the San Diego region had decreased nearly 40% from 1990 to 2015, and San Diegans have continued to use water wisely, beating the state's conservation targets. Storing 100,000 acre-feet of water in San Vicente Reservoir in Lakeside, where the tallest dam raise in the nation was recently completed, providing water for future dry years, while San Diegans across the region have made water use efficiency a way of life. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Gene Carpenter with our Capitol Report. Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, or CREW, announced Sunday that it is filing a federal lawsuit to stop President Trump from violating the Constitution by receiving payments from foreign governments that CREW contends are illegal. The Foreign Emoluments Clause of the Constitution prohibits a president from receiving anything of value from foreign governments, including foreign government-owned businesses, without the approval of Congress. We did not want to get to this point. It was our hope that President Trump would take the necessary steps to avoid violating the Constitution before he took office, CREW Executive Director Noah Bookbinder says, but adds, he did not. His constitutional violations are immediate and serious, so we were forced to take legal action. According to CREW, since Trump refused to divest from his businesses, he is now getting cash and favors from foreign governments through guests and events at his hotels, leases in his buildings, and valuable real estate deals abroad. Trump does business with countries such as China, India, Indonesia, and the Philippines, and now that he is president, his company's acceptance of any benefits from the governments of those countries violates the Constitution. When President Trump sits down to negotiate trade deals with these countries, the American people will have no way of knowing whether he will also be thinking about the profits of Trump the businessman, CREW points out. Bookbinder remarks, President Trump has made a slogan, America First, so you would think he would want to strictly follow the Constitution's Foreign Emoluments Clause, since it was written to ensure our government officials are thinking of Americans first, and not foreign governments. The lawsuit will be filed in the Southern District of New York on Monday. CREW, a nonprofit watchdog group dedicated to holding public officials accountable for their actions, plans to file the lawsuit Monday in New York. CREW is represented in the case by an all-star team of top constitutional scholars, ethics experts, and litigators who have combined to argue 45 cases before the Supreme Court.
George Orwell wrote in his book 1984, "The very concept of objective truth is fading out of the world. Lies will pass into history." Recent actions by the Trump administration to discredit journalists over truthful reports and stifle public comments have alarmed First Amendment supporters, constitutional scholars, journalists, and government watchdog groups. At a recent press conference, his very first, Donald Trump refused to answer a question posed by CNN and called the respected journalism organization fake news. His tirade came after CNN published information on a report from British intelligence warning that Russia is believed to have compiled a dossier including compromising videos with which to blackmail Trump. At the press conference, Trump then called on a reporter from Breitbart, an online news site considered a mouthpiece for the alt-right white supremacist movement. Trump's actions were so bizarre that even the conservative news outlet Fox News came to CNN's defense. Fox News's Shep Spence criticized Trump and said of CNN's report, "It is our observation that its correspondents followed journalistic standards and neither they nor any other news outlet's journalists should be subjected to belittling and delegitimizing by the President of the United States." Trump has insisted that reports of the Russian dossier are untrue, though Israeli intelligence has also supported the British intelligence agent's claim. Separately, when a National Park Service employee tweeted aerial photos showing a substantially smaller crowd at Trump's inauguration than Obama's inauguration, Trump ordered the National Park Service to suspend its Twitter account. Trump insisted with no verification that he drew the largest crowd ever for an inauguration, but that has been proven false. Washington, D.C.'s transit system operator has verified that ridership was much larger for Obama's inauguration than for Trump's. Trump's press secretary, Sean Spicer, also provided outright false information to media. PolitiFact and many other fact-checking organizations have shown, Spicer claimed that white coverings to protect the grass on the National Mall had never been used before and that these made the crowd just look sparser, but in fact those coverings were used during Obama's inauguration in 2013, too. Spicer also claimed that use of magnetometers prevented crowds from accessing the mall as quickly as they had in the past, since the photos were taken at slightly different times of day. But the Secret Service debunked that claim, telling CNN and the New York Times that magnetometers were not used on the National Mall for Trump's inauguration. Next up, Trump spokeswoman Kellyanne Conway told Chuck Todd on NBC's Meet the Press that Spicer provided, quote, alternative facts regarding the crowd size. Todd fired back, alternative facts? 4 of the 5 facts he uttered are not true. Alternative facts are not facts. They're falsehoods. Dictionary publisher Merriam-Webster offered up this textbook definition of the word fact. Quote, in contemporary use, fact is generally understood to refer to something with actual existence or presented as having objective reality. Unquote. Since his election, Trump's administration has criticized the media not for lying, but in fact for doing its job. On the campaign trail, he threatened to make it easier to file libel lawsuits against the press for what he called hit pieces. With regard to the esteemed New York Times, he stated, we're going to open up libel laws and we're going to have people sue you like you've never got sued before. Of course, public figures already have protection against libel. If a media outlet publishes material that it knows or should know is false with a malicious intent to cause harm, and that information causes damage to an individual. Trump's threats are clearly meant to intimidate the press. His actions are reminiscent of Richard Nixon, another president who sought to prevent the media from reporting truths that ultimately brought down his presidency when the Watergate scandal led to the resignation of Nixon and criminal convictions against multiple members of his administration. Trump's administration hasn't stopped at suppressing merely First Amendment freedom for the press, however important that may be. Trump's White House has also moved to silence the people's right to free speech, your rights, when it comes to contacting your new president. The revised White House website has removed the White House phone number off of the site. Calls to the old number are answered with this message. Thank you for calling the White House comments line. The comments line is currently closed. At one point, they referred people to send messages on Facebook via Instant Messenger. However, the White House has not signed up for the Messenger service. Shutting down public comments on the White House phone line contradicts the promise that Trump made in his inauguration speech when he promised that ordinary people would be heard under his administration. The forgotten men and women of our country will be forgotten no longer, he announced. Everyone is listening to you now. Everyone except the president, it appears. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
The Trump administration has removed many important subjects off of the issues section at the White House website. Gone are the informational pages and issue positions on civil rights, climate change, equal pay, rights of the disabled, immigration reforms, seniors and Social Security, gun violence, veterans issues, and the Affordable Care Act. While it's customary for each administration to refocus the site to reflect an incoming president's priorities, it is unusual to see a complete removal of references to core rights, liberties, and issues of interest to a broad sector of the population, such as health care. The action has prompted criticism and concern from communities advocating for minorities, women, the disabled, the environment, and others affected by the scrubbing of this information. Instead of climate change, an America First energy policy, the site now states, President Trump is committed to eliminating harmful and unnecessary policies, such as the Climate Action Plan and the Waters of the U.S. Rule. It touts restoring U.S. energy independence through increased oil drilling, gas extraction, and fracking, especially on public lands, while making no mention of solar, wind, or any other renewable resources. Local climate change activist and East County Magazine columnist Roger Kopuk fears that scientific data on climate change at other government sites may soon also disappear. After learning of Trump's administration removing civil rights, disabled rights, ACA information, and more off the White House site, she posted, a new era of repressive human rights. The Trump administration did add a few of its own issues. Instead of civil rights and the Obama administration's efforts to end racism in policing, you'll now find standing up for law enforcement on the Trump White House site. Other issues listed on Trump's version are America First foreign policy, bringing back jobs and growth, making our military strong again, and trade deals working for all Americans. For those seeking the old site, as it appeared during the Obama administration, it can still be found through the Internet Archive, known as the Wayback Machine, which you can find through a Google search. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is John Fisteer.
You're listening to KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, the Network for Social Justice.
President Donald Trump has signed an executive order to cancel the controversial Trans-Pacific Partnership trade pact with 12 Pacific Rim nations. The action is being hailed by even many Trump opponents who did not support the trade deal, but has drawn criticism from others, particularly in the business community. Evan Greer, director of Fight for the Future, a digital rights group that organized some of the largest protests against the TPP, hailed the decision, stating, "The victory against the TPP belongs to the people. An unprecedented international movement of people and organizations from across the political spectrum came together and led nothing short of an uprising that stopped an outright corporate takeover of our democratic process," he says. The TPP was initially supported by the Obama administration but failed to win passage in Congress. Top leaders and presidential candidates in both parties turned against the TPP following a public outcry that made support toxic for those seeking election or re-election. Trump campaigned on withdrawing the U.S. from the proposed TPP, arguing that free trade agreements such as the TPP, NAFTA, and CAFTA benefited global special interests at the expense of U.S. workers. Signing the order, he called it a great thing for the American worker. The Obama administration's arguments for the TPP included opening new markets for U.S. manufacturers to sell goods overseas, which could have increased jobs in U.S. factories. Obama's team also believed the TPP would provide an opportunity to raise environmental and labor standards in the member nations and limit growing Chinese influence. Pulling out of the pact, the president and supporters of the TPP argued, would benefit China and the remaining nations now apt to form their own trade deal without the United States. The TPP would have phased out around 18,000 tariffs those other 11 countries have on imported goods from the U.S. It also would have established rules for international trade, including digital commerce, intellectual property rights, human rights, and environmental rights. While that could help prohibit practices such as child labor overseas, opponents argue that some U.S. labor standards would be weakened, along with environmental standards. Some Republicans objected to the TPP because it would have limited monopoly protections on brand-name drugs made by big pharmaceutical companies. Organized labor and many Democrats opposed the deal because it lacked what they viewed as enforceable protections against manipulation of currency values by other countries. Many also raised concerns that the TPP would open the door to foreign interests suing through special trade tribunals to block local, state, or federal policies in the U.S., such as consumer safety or environmental protections. Some also feared internet censorship and erosion of creators' copyrights. TPP was carved out largely in secret, and though some objections were addressed with side agreements, the public was not allowed to see what went on behind closed doors. Fight for the Future's leader, Evan Greer, concludes, "Corporations attempted to turn the deal into a wish list for policies they knew they could not pass through a more transparent process. But an unlikely band of labor unions and tech companies, environmentalists, hackers, and Tea Party patriots took on the world's largest and most powerful corporations, and we won." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Jonathan Goetz.
This is Rebecca Williamson with a health report. Federal funding for abortions has long been banned, including under the Obama administration. But now, President Donald Trump has gone further, signing an executive order to halt all funding for nonprofits that provide abortions overseas. Even money that provides vital women's health services such as birth control, mammograms, prenatal checkups, and maternity care. Trump's action could cause 6.5 million unwanted pregnancies, nearly 22,000 mothers dying, over 2 million unsafe abortions, and countless deaths of newborn babies from preventable conditions. According to the U.S. Agency for International Development, the president's action comes just one day after the Women's March drew 2.9 million worldwide women urging support for women's rights. For women in Zika-infected areas, not having access to contraception will mean many babies born with microcephaly, which causes severe brain damage and other serious birth defects. In Africa, where AIDS is rampant, condoms save lives, but funding for that is cut off too. Lack of care during pregnancies can put unborn babies at risk. One program funded by the federal government that has resulted in a 55% drop in maternal deaths during childbirth in Zambia. But that won't be funded under the Trump order. California's new Senator Kamala Harris tweeted an image of the all-male political leaders on hand for the signing of Trump's order. She observed, "This group just made it more difficult for women to get access to health care worldwide. You tell me what's wrong with this picture." But Marjorie Dannefelser, president of the anti-abortion advocacy group Susan B. Anthony List, praised Trump for continuing Ronald Reagan's legacy by taking immediate action on day one to stop the promotion of abortion through our tax dollars overseas. But here are the true facts. Cutting off money for non-abortion services such as prenatal and maternity care will actually result in the deaths of many babies and cause others to suffer with serious birth defects or illnesses that in many cases could have been prevented with medical care. Eliminating funds for cancer screenings and care for women during pregnancy and childbirth also puts the lives of women around the world at risk, making it hard to justify description of Trump's executive order as truly pro-life.
This is Gene Carpenter with a health care update. In one of his first actions as president, Donald Trump signed an executive order directing federal agencies to reduce financial costs of the Affordable Care Act on insurance companies, healthcare providers, and patients by allowing agencies to waive, defer, grant exemptions, or delay implementation of any requirement in the Affordable Care Act, also known as the ACA or Obamacare. California Insurance Commissioner Dave Jones issued a statement blasting the decision. He says, "Based on my experience as a regulator of the largest insurance market in the United States, this executive order is likely to destabilize health insurance markets across the United States. President Trump's executive order is also contrary to his promise to provide health care coverage to all Americans," Jones adds. Trump has pledged to repeal the Affordable Care Act and replace it with insurance for everybody, though Republican leaders in Congress have been quick to say they believe the president meant everyone could have access to health care, not health care itself. In other words, the Republican plan would have everyone have the option to buy insurance, if you can afford it, not provide guaranteed health care for all, as all other industrialized nations in the world have already done, free for their citizens. Jones says Trump's order will create uncertainty in health insurance markets as to whether the federal government will enforce critically important provisions of the Affordable Care Act. The executive order specifically directs federal agencies not to enforce provisions that make sure all Americans are getting health insurance, so that the cost of treating sick and unhealthy Americans are spread across large enough risk pools, Jones observes. Without enforcement of these provisions, many health insurers will ultimately be forced to withdraw from health insurance markets. That would decrease competition, make health insurance unavailable, and drive up health insurance prices, California's insurance commissioner predicts. A major insurance company spokesman agrees. Larry Levitt, senior vice president at Kaiser Family Foundation, says Trump's order is apt to result in widespread waivers from the individual mandate for insurance, creating chaos in the individual insurance market. David Anderson, health policy analyst at Duke University, believes that without a mandate, younger and healthier people might not buy insurance, leaving insurers to cover mostly older and sicker people, forcing costs to become even more expensive for all policy, Politico reports. Trump's order doesn't specify exactly what would be cut or waived. However, one stated goal of the executive order is to provide greater flexibility to states. The Washington Post suggests this could open the door to changing rules for states that expanded Medicare under the ACA, an action that could hurt many low-income Americans. Joe Antos at the American Institute think tank has suggested that insurance companies might be allowed to offer policies that exclude costly items such as maternity care, coverage that is required under the ACA to protect mothers and their unborn babies. Under Trump's order, agencies could also roll back taxes on health insurers, medical device makers, and the wealthy. Those funds have helped fund the ACA. Trump's administration could also let the employees avoid ACA requirements to cover workers without facing penalties. It is unclear how much of the Affordable Care Act Trump could dismantle through executive action alone without action by Congress. But the Republican-controlled Senate already voted to begin repeal without waiting for a replacement. The House, also in Republican control, voted many times during Obama's administration to repeal the ACA without a replacement plan. Repeal of the ACA would also affect people who never had an ACA or Obamacare plan, since the ACA also sets rules for private insurance companies, such as prohibiting insurers from denying coverage to people due to pre-existing conditions and allowing parents to keep kids on their plans until age 25. President Trump on the campaign trail repeatedly vowed to repeal Obamacare, but has said he would replace it with a plan of his own, not create a massive void of uncertainty in the marketplace. Congressional Republicans who ran on a platform of repealing the ACA are now learning that it may be more difficult than they anticipated, with recent polls showing over 60% of Americans now support the ACA and don't want it repealed. Instead, they want to see problems with the ACA fixed, such as high premiums paid by some middle-income families and a shortage of doctors accepting Medicare patients due to lower reimbursement rates for physicians. But for now, the ACA appears to be on life support, with its repeal stoking fears among the 20 million people poised to lose health care coverage and many others who stand to lose key protections, even in private health insurance policies.
Leaders of the California Association of Realtors, National Association of Realtors, and National Association of Home Builders have all voiced opposition to an executive order issued by President Trump that could add as much as $1,500 to costs paid by many first-time home buyers. Trump's order cancels a rate cut that Barack Obama's administration had ordered for mortgage insurance paid by homeowners on FHA-backed mortgages. Obama's Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD, Julian Castro, said when he announced the cuts, with sufficient reserves on hand to meet future claims, it's time for FHA to pass along some modest savings to working families. But Trump's nominee for HUD Secretary, Ben Carson, said in Senate confirmation hearings that he supports canceling the Obama cuts. Carson has not yet been confirmed, but Trump issued the executive order rolling back the cuts on Friday as one of his first presidential actions. Trump's action to raise mortgage insurance costs for first-time and low-income homebuyers on FHA-backed loans seems to fly in the face of Trump's inauguration speech pledge that every action he takes would aim to benefit working families. Some Republicans have sought to justify the rollback by saying if low-income buyers default on loans, the FHA could be unable to cover losses, leaving taxpayers footing the bill. The FHA did receive a $1.7 billion bailout back in 2013 when the subprime mortgage market collapsed. But the FHA Mutual Mortgage Insurance Fund's capital reserve ratio has exceeded requirements for the past 2 years, the Los Angeles Times reports. California Association of Realtors President Jeff McIntosh issued a statement calling on Trump to reverse his action. McIntosh says, FHA's single-family home portfolio is as financially sound as it has ever been, and we hope that once the new administration has thoroughly reviewed the merits of the premium reduction, the suspension will immediately be lifted. The National Association of Realtors estimates that Trump's action will increase home buying costs for over a quarter of a million Americans in the next year alone. The association's president, Bill Brown, stated, "We're disappointed in the decision, but will continue making the case to reinstate the cut in the months ahead." A spokesman for the National Association of Home Builders also opposes the Trump executive order, but told Huffington Post it will work with the Trump administration, adding, "We feel confident that they will reinstate the reduction." Nationwide, new FHA borrowers could have saved $500 a year with the rate cut, the Obama administration had estimated. But in California, where housing costs are higher than the national average, much more is at stake. The California Association of Realtors estimates that the cut would have saved homebuyers in California with FHA-backed loans an average of $860 a year. In San Diego, where the median cost of housing is even higher than statewide, losses for homebuyers could be far higher. On a $600,000 loan with a down payment under 5% on a 30-year mortgage, homebuyers must now pay $1,500 more due to Trump's action. The hike in mortgage insurance costs for homebuyers helped by the FHA program is the second blow for first-time and low-income homebuyers this winter, coming on the heels of an interest rate hike shortly after the November election. A slowdown in the nation's home buying market could also have broad ramifications for the economy overall. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Jonathan Getz.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Tribal Beat. Native American activists and environmentalists are voicing dismay and pledging to fight back against executive orders signed by President Donald Trump to advance construction of the controversial Dakota Access and Keystone XL oil pipelines. The Obama administration had halted the Keystone XL pipeline, and the Army Corps of Engineers, under President Obama, had agreed to reroute part of the Dakota Access pipeline to avoid going under a river that supplies drinking water for Native American tribes, including the Standing Rock Sioux in North Dakota, where over 300 tribes nationwide and thousands of individuals have converged in the past year in protests that drew international media coverage. Trump ordered the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to quickly review and approve construction and easement requests for the Dakota Access Pipeline, despite the fact that Trump himself reportedly has financial interests in the pipeline company. He also invited TransCanada, builder of the Keystone XL, to resubmit its application, which the company has said it will do. Trump's executive orders require that all materials for both pipelines be made in the United States. Republican Congressman Kevin Cramer of North Dakota released a statement praising the president's actions, calling the pipelines crucial energy infrastructure projects that will create jobs. But David Archambault II, tribal chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux, issued a statement calling Trump's actions politically motivated. He says the decision violates the law and that the tribe will take action to fight it. The tribe's attorney, Jan Hasselman, says the tribe will file a lawsuit. Chairman Archambault says that by granting the easement, quote, Trump is risking our treaty rights and water supply to benefit his wealthy contributors and friends at Dakota Access Pipeline. He adds, Americans know this pipeline was unfairly rerouted towards our nation without our consent. The existing pipeline route risks infringing on our treaty rights, contaminating our water and the water of 17 million Americans downstream. And he observes, creating a second Flint does not make America great again. A reference to Flint, Michigan, where drinking water has been contaminated by lead due to the neglect of public officials. Asked by a reporter what message he would send to the Standing Rock Sioux after signing the pipeline order, Trump turned away and refused to answer the question. Barona tribal member Bobby Wallace in Lakeside decried the Trump announcement as too much. He has organized relief caravans bringing supplies donated by local tribal members to support the water protectors, as the demonstrators have asked to be called, in Cannonball, North Dakota. Meanwhile, water protectors are preparing to put their bodies on the line once again to try and stop the project, despite a recent resumption of violence by police and arrests targeting the water protectors encamped amid snow and sub-freezing temperatures, Indigenous People reports. Demonstrators have already endured water cannons, rubber bullets, pepper spray, and dog attacks that have caused injury. Those were launched by both police and private security forces employed by the pipeline company, in which a key Trump administration official also has a financial interest.
Bill McKibben, founder of the activist group 350.org, which has fought both the Keystone XL and Dakota Access pipelines, said Trump's decision to allow these projects to move forward ignores the massive opposition expressed through public protests and comments to government agencies. Those include major protests here in San Diego. The huge amount of carbon that tar sands set for transport in the XL pipeline would release into the atmosphere would dramatically accelerate climate change, experts have warned. McKinnon says the world's climate scientists and its Nobel laureates explained over and over why it was unwise and immoral. In one of his first actions as president, Donald Trump ignores all that in his eagerness to serve the oil industry, he says. The environmental leader concludes, "It's a dark day for a reason, but we will continue to fight."
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso in the heart of San Diego's East County.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is Jonathan Getz with a report from our state capital in Sacramento. Governor Edmund G. Brown Jr. delivered his State of the State address, departing with the traditional practice of listing every issue to instead address what he called the broader context of our country and its challenges. The governor vowed to defend everybody, every man, woman, and child who has come here and has contributed to the well-being of our state and committed to protecting the state's gains on immigration, health care, and climate change, guided by the principles that make California the great exception, truth, civility, and perseverance. Brown noted that California is the sixth most powerful economy in the world and that one out of every eight Americans lives in our state. Over a quarter of those were born in a foreign land, he observed, adding, "When California does well, America does well. And when California hurts, America hurts." He quoted the English poet John Donne, stating, "No man is an island entire of itself. Every man is a piece of the continent, a part of the main." The governor noted that California has welcomed immigrants since the Gold Rush era, people who have built our state through a spirit of perseverance. He cited California's accomplishments during his time in office when the state has increased by tens of billions of dollars support for our public schools and universities, provided health insurance to over 5 million more Californians, raised the minimum wage, reduced prison overcrowding, and reformed our system of crime and punishment, made California a world leader in the fight against climate change, passed a water bond, built up a rainy day fund, closed a $27 billion deficit, and reduced unemployment in the past 7 years from 12.1% to 4.2%, also creating 2.5 million jobs. But Brown said the election of President Donald Trump shows deep divisions across America, and he finds the new administration's early signals disturbing, citing, quote, "bald assertion of alternative facts and attacks on science," adding, "familiar signposts of our democracy, truth, civility, working together, have been obscured or swept aside." He added, "So, as we reflect on the state of our state, we should do so in the broader context of our country and its challenges. That means preparing for uncertain times," he made clear. Brown struck a defiant tone on immigration. While recognizing that immigration policy is a federal issue, the governor said, "As a state, we can and have had a role to play. California has enacted several protective measures for the undocumented. The Trust Act, lawful driver's licenses, basic employment rights, and non-discriminatory access to higher education. We may be called upon to defend those laws, and defend them we will," he said. Brown said that more than any other state, California embraced the Affordable Care Act and over 5 million people are benefiting from it here. But that coverage has come with tens of billions of federal dollars. Taking that money away, as Trump has pledged, by repealing the Affordable Care Act would be devastating for California, Brown said. Brown stated with pride that California is known worldwide for actions to encourage renewable energy and combat climate change. noting that 194 countries have signed the climate change pact that Trump wants to withdraw the U.S. from, Governor Brown admonished, "We cannot fall back and give in to the climate deniers. The science is clear. The danger is real." He said California can and will join with other states, Canadian provinces, and nations to stop the dangerous rise in climate pollution. One agreement where Brown hopes to find common ground with President Trump is on infrastructure. In his inaugural address, Trump pledged to build new roads, highways, bridges, airports, tunnels, and railways. Brown noted that in California, there are roads, tunnels, railroads, and a dam that the president could help build and create good-paying American jobs. As we face the hard journey ahead, we will have to summon, as Abraham Lincoln said, the better angels of our nature. Above all else, we have to live in the truth, Brown concluded, adding that for democracy to work, we have to trust each other. That means stating facts and trusting science. But along with truth, the governor observed, we must practice civility. In California, Democrats are in the majority, but Republicans represent real Californians too, he said, noting that the state leadership went beyond party to establish a rainy day fund, pass a water bond, and reform workers' compensation. Brown urged legislators to continue to work together and set an example for the nation. Against an uncertain future, Governor Brown concluded, "This is a time which calls out for courage and for perseverance. I promise you both. But let's remember as well that after the perilous voyage, those who made it to America found boundless opportunity. And so will we." Jerry Brown then ended his speech by reciting lyrics from Woody Guthrie's song, "This Land Is Your Land."
San Diego's Democratic State Senator Tony Atkins and East County's new Assemblyman, Republican Randy Vopel from Santee, have shared their reactions to Governor Jerry Brown's State of the State address. Senator Atkins issued a statement which reads, "Governor Brown made it clear that California will not turn its back on the immigrants who contribute so richly to our culture and our economy, nor will we turn away from reproductive health care and climate science. Our state will continue to lead the way forward on these issues." She added that Brown also recognizes that in a democracy, there are different points of view. Atkins said, "California, like the nation, has many unique communities, and it is our obligation to understand their perspectives and experiences. We may not always agree, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't strive to find common ground." The governor reminded Californians that we have a lot to be proud of: a strong economy, bolstered reserves, higher minimum wage, reduced unemployment, greater investments in education, and he pointed out that new investments in public works would help us continue the forward momentum, said Senator Atkins. She added that the governor touched my heart when he ended with a Woody Guthrie lyric, "Great speech, vintage Jerry Brown." Randy Vopel noted that while job growth numbers cited by the governor appear strong on the surface, a number of our state's citizens who have struggled to find work have left California for other states in the hopes of finding employment. On Brown's statement that California has increased support for public schools and universities by tens of thousands of dollars, Vopel responded, "Despite the increases in funding, our students' performance still falls well behind other states." He called for additional reforms but did not specify what those might be. Regarding the governor's pledge to make California a world leader in the fight against climate change, Vopel, a climate change skeptic, says the current cap and trade program has been a complex and ineffective boondoggle. He differed sharply with the governor's pledge to protect undocumented immigrants against deportation threats from Trump's administration. Many of the measures he has supported have directly conflicted with federal law and have made it more difficult for enforcement officials to execute their responsibilities, Assemblyman Vopel said. Vopel noted that recent reforms to reduce prison populations also created public safety challenges for local law enforcement. He called the Affordable Care Act an ineffective and improper solution, but did not offer an alternative health care proposal. One area of potential agreement with the governor and President Trump is on an infrastructure plan to create jobs. Though Vopel wants the focus on transportation projects without raising taxes or fees, he applauded Governor Brown for focusing on long-term fiscal health by proposing to strengthen the Rainy Day Fund. Though Vopel suggested the governor's revenue predictions may be overly optimistic. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ Radio, this is Rebecca Williamson.
This is John Fisteer with a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. If you are a low-income family or individual, you won't have to pay to have your income taxes prepared. The county can help you file your taxes for free. Starting January 23rd and continuing through April 18th, approximately 650 volunteers will be helping people to file their taxes electronically at about 60 locations across the county. The only requirement for this free service is that filers are low income. The free tax preparation service helps residents claim their earned income tax credit, the federal government's largest assistance program to support low-income families. But according to the IRS, about 20% of eligible people don't claim the credit, and some don't even know about it. As part of the county's campaign, you can have your taxes prepared for you, prepare them yourself with assistance from a volunteer, or do them on your own by visiting myfreetaxes.com. To receive free services, all you have to do is call 211 to make an appointment at a site near you. Individuals and families who worked in 2016 and earned less than $53,505 could qualify for as much as $6,269 in federal Earned Income C tax credit. The California credit could be as much as $2,653. Residents must file a tax return to be eligible for both credits. Last year, the county's volunteers filed nearly 32,000 federal and state tax returns, bringing about $37 million in total refunds to local working families and individuals.
This is Kim Cooney reporting from El Cajon. There is a burning issue coming up on February 7th when El Cajon's Planning Commission will consider a proposal to convert an existing building on North Marshall Avenue into a crematorium that would incinerate human remains. With cemetery plot prices rising and the population aging, demand for cremations has been on the rise. But crematoriums in urban areas can cause serious problems. In 2011, the county shut down a crematorium in unincorporated El Cajon after many public complaints and findings of health hazards to the public from the aging facility. Videos taken by neighbors and eyewitness accounts documented smoke and sparks coming out of the facility. Ashes coated nearby cars, patios, and even hamburgers at a fast food restaurant next door, as an East County Magazine investigation reported. While emissions from a properly run crematorium should not pose dangers to others, poorly maintained equipment can deteriorate, creating health risks for the community. The Planning Commission hearing on the proposed crematorium will be held in City Council chambers at 7 p.m. on February 7th. Public comments can be made at the hearing or by written correspondence beforehand.
This is Miriam Raftery with a report from Santee. Brian Jones, a former state assemblyman and ex-Santee councilman, is returning to his old job once again. He was appointed by the city council after a five-hour interview with prospective applicants to fill the vacancy on the council. Jones, a conservative Republican, recently stepped down from his assembly seat due to term limits. Santee's council voted 3-1 to appoint Jones to the seat left vacant when John Minto was elected mayor. The council position has about 2 years remaining, and Jones said he plans to run for the state Senate seat. It's now held by Senator Joel Anderson, who will be termed out in 2018. So the council seat will once again be open in the next election. Newly elected Councilman Stephen Houlihan cast the only vote against Jones. He nominated Jennifer Tellitz, a radio sales executive, but that motion died for lack of a second vote. Another nominee, Dustin Trotter, a construction firm owner who came in second place behind Houlihan in the election, also failed to get a second. Councilman Ron Hall then nominated Jones, who was seconded by Minto and obtained the council majority vote. The other finalist in the lengthy process was Don Gibbs, a small business owner. Minto and the rest of the council members said they were most impressed by the breadth of talent and the number of quality candidates who threw their hats in the ring. "There are a lot of smart people out here," said Minto. A total of 34 applicants were screened, each getting 3 minutes to make their case before the council narrowed the field to a handful of finalists. The remaining candidates were asked about their stands on such hot-button issues as new development, traffic, marijuana sales, neighborhood preservation, and how they might interact with state and federal governments. Some of the applicants pointed out things that could be improved. John Olson said citizen participation in government could get much better if council meetings were live-streamed online. James Sly thought the city could do a better job of attracting big companies to Santee and using tax revenues to fund things like a new library and road improvements. Van Collingsworth, founder of the nonprofit environmental group Preserve Wild Santee, said the city should look at changing energy providers to a community aggregation model. The move would not only result in cheaper energy, it would allow the city to return any profits to city control and fund other services, he said. Rocky Quaylen thought the city should install Wi-Fi access so that everybody could be connected to the internet. Thomas Moeller said the city should install a dedicated truck lane on Highway 52 and restrict its uses to relieve congestion, making the roads safer. Trotter made the point that of all the applicants, he was the only one to run in the last election and has spent countless hours observing the council, becoming familiar with issues affecting the city. Jones' former legislative aide, Mason Heron, also ran for the council seat, but he lost to Houlihan after revelations of big developer donations to his campaign. And yet, a majority of the council seemed intent on appointing someone other than Trotter and ultimately selected the ultimate insider in Jones, a commercial real estate agent. In making his case, Jones underscored his extensive record as an elected official on both the council and in the assembly. He said, "What this comes down to is experience, track record, and connections. I can hit the ground running and make the decisions on what's best for the citizens of Santee." Brian Jones will be sworn in at the next council meeting on February 8th.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from our region.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Rebecca Williamson
and Jonathan Getz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week. This week's Destination East County includes Party with the Stars, Cabaret Nights, What the Butler Saw, and a Courtly Noise concert.
Plus, we'll tell you about coming attractions, including Cupid's Carouse, a production of To Kill a Mockingbird, a Celtic guitar concert, Cuyamaca College's Pow Wow, Cupids and Canines, plus dancing and dining with your Valentine.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa's production of What the Butler Saw, a classic British farce, continues now through February 19th. When a psychiatrist tries to seduce an aspiring secretary, his botched efforts lead to a comic bedlam involving his insatiable wife, a randy bellhop, a befuddled police officer, and Sir Winston Churchill. For tickets and details, you can visit lamplighterslamesa.com.
Young Actors Theater will host cabaret nights on Friday and Saturday, January 27th and 28th at the YAT Theater in Spring Valley. The cabaret nights showcase talented YAT members performing musical, dance, and acting performances to benefit the theatrical group. For tickets, you can visit yatsandiego.org.
The La Mesa Arts Foundation invites you to Party in the Stars at the La Mesa Community Center on January 28th. The event benefits the La Mesa Arts Academy. The event will be held from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. Party in the Stars will include live music, food, and a silent auction. For tickets, visit lamesaarts.org.
This weekend is your last chance to enjoy outdoor ice skating at the Viejas Outlet Center in Alpine, which closes Sunday evening until the next holiday season. For details, you can visit viejas.com.
Mission Trails Regional Park will host a concert featuring Courtly Noise on January 29th at 3 p.m., performing Renaissance music. The group began singing madrigals atop Mount Palomar and has since added instrumentalists. Just like our forebears in the 16th century, you can enjoy an afternoon with music, storytelling, and humor. You can find details at mtrp.org.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
The Native American Student Alliance at Cuyamaca College will host its third annual powwow on Saturday, February 4th from 10:30 a.m. to 8 p.m. in front of the Communication Arts Complex. The powwow aims to promote Native American heritage with activities including bird singing, a native singing style of the Kumeyaay people honoring culture and traditions of local tribes. The event also includes arts and craft vendors, food, drums, native dances, and more. For details, visit cuyamaca.edu.
The nonprofit Hearts for San Diego invites you to show some love by attending Cupid's Carouse, an annual tasting party on Saturday, February 11th at 7 p.m. at the La Mesa Community Center. Wines, beers, spirits will be paired with Valentine favorite foods and tasty sweets. There will also be a silent auction and raffle. Hearts for San Diego has helped raise funds for other nonprofit organizations helping veterans, special needs children, animals, and the environment. For tickets, visit heartsforsd.org.
Acoustic guitarist, singer, and songwriter Jim Earp will perform Hawaiian and Celtic guitar music as well as folk rock songs at the San Pasqual Winery Tasting Room and Gallery in La Mesa on Saturday, February 11th from 7 to 10 p.m. Wine and cheese are available for the performance in the winery's cozy back room. For details, you can go to sanpasqualwinery.com.
If you're looking for some puppy love, over 100 dogs and puppies from local rescue groups will be at Grossmont Center looking for a loving home during the Cupids and Canines Pet Adoption Event on February 12th from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. You're invited to meet, play with, and learn about each dog. And if you find your perfect match, you can take your new furry friend home this Valentine's Day weekend. Dozens of pet adoption groups will be on site for this special event. For more information, visit grossmontcenter.com.
The Roundup Grill in Santa Isabel invites you to dance and dine with your Valentine on February 14th. Your feast by Chef John Little will be paired with wines from Ramona Ranch Winery, from bubbly to beef short ribs braised with Cabernet and chocolate to a surprise dessert. Live fiddle music by Celia will combine jazz and blues, Zydeco and Celtic music for dancing the night away with your sweetheart. For tickets and details, visit RamonaRanch.com and click on What's the Buzz.
Pickwick Players will present To Kill a Mockingbird February 17th through the 26th at Off-Broadway Live in Santee. Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Harper Lee, To Kill a Mockingbird is the timeless and timely story of attorney Atticus Finch and his children Scout and Jem in the summer of 1935 in Macon, Alabama. Atticus strives to raise his children to be willing to see the world from other people's perspectives. But when Atticus agrees to defend a young black man unfairly accused of accosting a white woman, he finds his children and himself in grave danger. This coming-of-age story of prejudice and violence, tolerance and community is as relevant today as it was when it was first published in 1960. The novel was adapted to a screenplay which won the Academy Award for Best Picture. For tickets and details, visit pickwickplayers.net.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technician, Liz Alper, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.